Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm S.W. Conser, and today I'll be bringing you a special never-before-aired conversation between Tony Millionaire and Chris Onstad, recorded by Bill Dodge in 2009 at Powell's City of Books. Tony Millionaire is a cartoonist, author, and illustrator who, in true New England fashion, manages to be both whimsical and irascible. His illustrations have appeared in The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, and The New Yorker, and his most popular comic titles include Sock Monkey, Billy Hazelnuts, and Mackies. Animated versions of his Mackies characters Uncle Gabby and Drinky Crow have made appearances on Adult Swim, as well as Saturday Night Live. Chris Onstad is a Portland-based writer and cartoonist whose comic Akewood was serialized online from 2001 to 2016. In 2007, it was named Time Magazine's Graphic Novel of the Year, and in 2020, all of Onstad's strips were collected and published by Oni Press in the book Akewood, The Complete Canon. Before we join up with Tony and Chris, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that we are currently in the midst of KBOO's all-important fall membership drive, and you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. Because we're staying safe and trying to get those COVID numbers down, we are not in the station to take your calls right now, but you can show your support by giving online, kboo.fm. KBOO is one of the very last media outlets that still brings you local and independent news, media, and public affairs. We've been doing this here in Portland for over half a century, and this program has been coming to you for nearly 17 years now, inviting important cultural figures into the studio and venturing out to events that might fly beneath the radar of the big media monoliths. So yes, you can support this very special programming today by going online to kboo.fm/give, or if you like, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now, Tony Millionaire and Chris Onstad, recorded by Bill Dodge at Powell's City of Books in Portland on September 23rd, 2009. And I will just note that during this appearance, Tony and Chris walk on stage outfitted in French Renaissance garb, borrowed from the wardrobe department at Portland Center Stage.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight, we are proud to present two of the greatest comic book artists of all time, Chris Onstad and Tony Millionaire. Chris and Dark Horse Comics have compiled Akewood, Volume 2, Worst Songs Played on Ugliest Guitar, an extensively annotated collection of the first few years of Akewood comic strips. Time Magazine, said Chris Onstad, the writing has an enormous emotional range, from aching sadness to some of the most brilliant, bizarre comedy happenings anywhere in the medium. Time Magazine's number one graphic novel of 2007, he won the Ignatz Award for Outstanding Comic Online 2007 and 2008. We are also pleased to present Tony Millionaire with his latest book, The Art of Tony Millionaire. Beginning with early strips that predate the Mackies, Tony guides his readers on a fever dream of dollies, apes, and exotic mysteries in the form of illustrations, comics, photographs, and anecdotes from his crazy life. Please give a warm Powell's welcome to Tony and Chris.
That's Tony.
This is Chris.
So, thank you.
Does anybody have any lipstick I could borrow?
He's missing a bit for his Louis XIV. Thank you everyone for coming out. We didn't prepare anything, but we're happy to be entertaining if you'll be entertained. Where should we begin? I think we didn't plan to do a Laurel and Hardy thing. It just happened.
All right.
Does anyone have any questions or anything? We'll get to the signing afterwards, but for now it's sort of open forum, if you will. Tony's a little nervous. Please.
Right, questions?
Look at my lipstick on, it'll be fun.
He's been on an airplane all day, so he needs a lipstick. If I could take any questions from the audience, I'd be happy to.
Like this?
Right there, sir.
You wanted to end that for the last 2 years. But
yes.
For the last 2 years, the guy in the gorilla suit accepted for you? What's up with that? Was that you?
That was David Malkey. He does a web comic called, I hate to use that word. He does a comic called, what is
Wonder
David Malkey doing? Wondermark. Yes, thank you. David Malkey, who actually is a licensed pilot and flew his own by himself. No, he wears the gorilla suit because I don't like to fly, so he'll go back to Maryland or wherever they do that. And it was not me. So the rumors can be put to rest.
Any questions?
Yes, sir.
Where's Billy Hazelnuts 2?
What?
What happened to Billy Hazelnuts 2?
Oh, I am working on Billy Hazelnuts 2. They did give me a TV show, the Drinking Crow show, on Adult Swim. So, like everything I can think of, all I could do was just draw that. So I had to draw all the backgrounds and the characters, and I had to make sure that the designers were doing things right. And then the people at Fantagraphics were telling me, where's the Billy Hazelnuts? Where's the Billy Hazelnuts? And then I kept saying, well, it's been a little bit too late. It'll be a little while. I hope you don't mind. And then Gary Groth from Fantagraphics said, hope you don't mind. I just stopped minding as soon as I heard it was going to be a year late. So it is more than a year late, but it's almost finished. And in this one, Billy Hazelnuts drives a gingerbread car over the mountains to a snowstorm. It's almost finished. It will be out in the spring. It's weird being a cartoonist. Suddenly, like, you're sitting around hoping you can get a job drawing comics or drawing illustrations or something. And all of a sudden, you get so much work that comes in because I don't have a regular job. I just have like different people calling all the time. And speaking of Silver Surfer, I did do an Iron Man comic.
Woo!
8 pages.
Wow.
How'd that pay?
Pay?
It's Germaine.
Pay was good. Pay was better than Dark Horse pay.
Yeah. our editor is
when's your Iron Man
conference? You tipped on dinner, right?
Yeah. So when they asked me to do an Iron Man comic, I thought, well, what am I going to do? I got to fight the villain, right? So it came ahead with Baloney Head. So he fights Baloney Head and Zimbor's face. Because it was like not a real Iron Man comic, it was more like, let's see what you can do with Iron Man. And we ran into it, it was so much fun. Then he fought against Dwight D. Eisenhower. Eisenhower in German means iron special.
Really?
It does. Eisenhower. Also, Dwight D. Eisenhower warned against the military industrial complex, which is Tony Stark.
Tonight is education. So, hope that answers that.
So, how did you experiment with the Fourth of Mercury go when you got your strip into the paper?
Oh, it didn't go as well as you. I got kicked out of the paper after about 2 weeks.
Oh, that's great, 2 weeks. So
yeah.
They really gave you a chance to...
They gave me a chance, but they're still paying you, yes.
For the audience to read it for a little while. They gave you 2 weeks.
Yeah, it didn't work out. I don't want to answer... I don't want to answer questions
10 weeks, at least.
I don't want to answer questions from this guy all night. What else have we got?
Any questions?
That was the important piece of equipment.
How did you get started, both of you, cartoons?
Nothing.
We started drawing little animals, and then he made him start talking. And before you knew it, he made Akewood.
Wasn't good at working for a living.
Did you work for a living? What did you do for a job?
I was a graphic designer.
Any questions for Chris?
I designed technical documents for the internet. Yeah, it's great. Been there 10 years.
This guy that sucks.
Does he have depression?
Unless I get depression.
Oh, it's terrible. Sorry. Hand me my beer.
Okay, shall we start the fun and have some draw signs of
pictures? Hand me my beer.
We're gonna start the fun and draw pictures.
I've got a question.
Right now.
Are you wearing cravats or ties?
Jabots.
Oh, thank you.
I have to say,
cravats or ties.
Thank you to Portland Center Stage, which is in the armory, right over there, for loaning me the costume. None of you were here, obviously, our host. Thank you for saving me $100 on the costume rental. Everyone go see Ragtime. This was on the rack.
I'd like to thank my grandmother, King Louis the 1,000,000th, for the loan of the costume.
Really, you're a shy bunch, come on.
I keep looking at the kids because I figure they're an easier.
Kids are, rude, curious people. Until the dye is in their hearts.
Okay, let the fun begin!
right there.
Yeah, for Chris, what is your favorite character?
What'd she say?
The favorite character? You know, that's really important. Because the ones that, you know, there are several that I care about, that's why I write them, you know. So, like, I mean, sometimes people go, which one's you? Or which one do you like the most? Or, you know, those are the general question set. But to tell you the truth, I really like to write for Cornelius the most because he has the most expansive and broad voice. His writing can be in-depth and intelligent, and not that I am, but I feel like I have the most room with him. Studio apartment versus mansion. I feel like he's the mansion that I can work with in. Because he's older, he's cultured, there's the presumption that he knows more about the world, so I enjoy that character. That is your answer.
Yes, someone once asked me, is Drinky Crow a self-portrait? And I said, every character that every artist ever draws is a self-portrait. That's why all those little characters in Eightwood are actually self-portraits of him. And they're also portraits of all of you and everybody. And that's what makes good comics, that's what makes them work, is if you can see parts of yourself, parts of other people in the comics. So, personality, Sue.
Intellectualizing. Crap, that's not a popular avenue with me. No, that's very much true. I mean, if a cartoonist draws characters, it's because they know what to write, either as themselves or their friends. You had a question, sir.
I haven't read a lot about your process, but I was actually wondering, do you think more about your audience or yourself when you're satisfying for your jokes? Like, your bits that you carry on, and like, they're to really to a point where you, like, is he going to, like, every next script, you're like, he's still going with that, and when it gets funnier, and,
you know, that's a great question. It's the fact of the matter is that if you're doing this, if you have this desire to create this way, creating to an audience is impossible because everyone in this room wants to read something different or wants everything that you started to write go a little different way. And so, from the beginning, the guideline has been, I'll do it if it makes me laugh. If it doesn't make me laugh, I'm not going to post it until it's done, which is why you see the publishing schedule that I have is irregular and hard to follow, and I'm sorry for that, but I'm not going to be regular for the sake of regularity. I'm going to publish when I'm interested in what I have done, and that's the only way I can take the catalog of work that I have created and say, okay, when I look back on this, I won't be embarrassed, and that's those are my guidelines.
I'll field that question. I find that if you are drawing comics or writing anything or painting anything, you've got to draw and write or paint things that you find very interesting to yourself. The most interesting things you can think of that are interesting to yourself and your close friends. Something you know that your friends will laugh at, something that maybe one of your friends said, you can take it, twist it, and steal it, turn it around, and turn it into your own. And I find that I also have some enemies over my head. My brother Lenny, the very sarcastic Lenny, always hanging over my head. And I drew a comic strip one time of a giant eyeball, and me drawing at a drawing table, and there was a giant eyeball staring at me, and I was drawing it, and I was just getting frustrated, and I said, damn you, Lenny! Because I always think, Lenny's gonna think this is stupid. So I better do it well, or he'll laugh at me. He'll make fun of me. He'll call me up and go, great comic tone. So I write for myself and against Lenny.
So Tony writes against Lenny. I would like to echo his point, what is most private is most public. That's the thing they tell you when you do fiction writing classes in college, right? Pretend like you're writing to a friend of yours. Write a comic that makes you laugh that you would like to share with a friend. Because by the time you get to have 10 fans, or 100 fans, or 100,000 readers, you can't expect to make them all happy. So you have to withdraw into yourself. And I'm happy to say that I have withdrawn into myself.
You're listening to Words and Pictures, and today we're bringing you a never-before-aired conversation between authors and comics creators Tony Millionaire and Chris Onstad, recorded at Powell's City of Books in September of 2009. And while everybody's enjoying this repartee, I do want to remind our listeners that you can help keep this community media outlet strong. Donate today at kboo.fm/give. We are being cautious during this pandemic, so we're not in the station to take your calls right now, but you can show your support by giving online, kboo.fm. It's so easy to become a member of this long-standing independent media outlet that has brought so much joy and culture to this place we call home. You can join today at any level, $5, $10, or $20 a month, at kboo.fm/give. Support this program and all the independent news, music, and public affairs that are so important to us all right now. Once again, that's kboo.fm/give. Or if you like, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now, more of Tony Millionaire and Chris Onstad at Powell's City of Books in 2009.
Yes.
I have a question for Mr. Millionaire. In terms of working with the Drinky Crow show, how did you find, I noticed the Drinky Crow show was much more violent and graphic than the comic, and I wonder if that was something that you just found easier to express in animation, or if that was something the network lent, or just your own direction?
Well, that man said,
Drinky Crow, can you buy a figurine?
What?
How much can he pay you for being here?
How much what?
you might want to repeat that one.
Sure. Working with animation, what did you find in terms of the animation, the crossover between coming from the comic strip and getting the more fluid and the more movement in the cartoon show and being able to express the violence a little bit more of Drinky Crow? What was that experience?
Doing the TV show is a little bit difficult because I realized it wasn't mine anymore. I realized that I could figure out a way to get some money. And I figured also that maybe it would work out, maybe it would be really funny, but it was a risk.
Yeah.
And so I tried to keep as much control on it as I could. But there's something about the actions of a comic strip character that is totally different than the actions of cartoons. I tried to tell those guys, try to make it snap into poses Bullwinkle, even though they're rounded characters and they're full of textures. Try to not do too much Bugs Bunny and squash and stretch. I want it to be just bam. Like in comics, this panel happens where suddenly bam, Drinky's got the gun and it's all happening. What? And sometimes, the slow movements and motions. But the biggest problem that they had was with Uncle Gabby, the pupils. They said you can't make a comic an animation with a character that doesn't have any pupils.
That was the biggest concern.
I said, what are you talking about? And then I thought about Fred, what's his name, Barney Rubble and Wilma. And then I thought, and I really couldn't think of anyone. So they really wanted to have pupils. So the guy could look around, and they said, it's really disconcerting when you can't tell what the character's looking at. But I said, we got to do it. Am I answering the question properly?
Hollywood is a pupils town.
Pupils run that city.
Those guys in Adult Swim were good. I was like, do you think maybe we should tone it down a little bit for the TV? They said, please tone it up. So we kept having to get more, and actually it turned out to be more violent than the comics. Okay.
Anyone else?
Yes.
Is Drinky Crow's voice on the show what you envisioned? Did you pick the person who does the audio for that?
Was Drinky Crow's voice on the show what?
Was that how you thought Drinky Crow should sound, or was that a network decision?
No, it was very, very, very hard to find a voice for him. Uncle Gabby was easy, got it in a second, and I love that. Dave Herman did a great job of his voice. Even though it wasn't exactly the way I pictured him, you'll never get it the way you picture it in the strip. Drinky Crow, I tell you, Tom Kenny auditioned for it, from the guy who does the voice of SpongeBob. And he did it, he came in 3 days and tried to get that voice. But it always had to be SpongeBob or some guy. And they said, you gotta tell him another show. I have to fire Tom Kenny.
So I did. In fact, Will West, who does Squidward on SpongeBob. And he got the voice just right. We found some old movies where he said, I want to be like this old movie, this guy, this character, where he's kind of like this, see? And I said, yeah, kind of like that. See what you can do. And he came up with this voice and it was great. And then his agent said, the pilot is not a union production. So Billy West cannot do it. So we had to get somebody else. So we got Dino Stamatopoulos, who produced Moral Oral, who's an old friend of mine, a crazy drunk. And he tried to copy Billy West's voice. But after it went along, I just started to fall apart. So what are you going to do? He was the hardest voice. Everybody else was simple. The girl, the captain's daughter, the captain, Uncle Gabby, Drinking Crow. The thing is, he's like, when you're reading about Drinking Crow, it's like you're reading like Charlie Brown's voice. It's like, this is my voice. And you read it with your own voice. So if it doesn't sound like your own voice, it doesn't sound right. Right?
Indeed.
That's the difference.
Well said.
That's why I like, back to drunk comic books.
Dan. Yes, ma'am. The lady.
I'm really curious. I'm sure that you've gotten a lot of photos and writing about people's tattoos, Chris.
Yes.
From your promotions with like Skelty. I have one that I haven't used. And I really wonder how you react to that and like what you think about that whole phenomenon now that it's been happening for a couple years.
Can I see it?
I have a certificate I haven't used yet.
Let's see it.
I'm
on
your
skeleton. Yes, I met you at Skeleton last year. I remember you. Hello. Well, do you want to come up and show the crowd, or is it a little?
Woo!
Yeah.
Thank you. Did they get a camera?
I'd love to see what you're trying to.
Yeah.
Nice to see.
Oh, that's nice.
Drinking Crow. And the cast. I wish we had like a mirror that you show. The cast dancing at the party right before the fart joke that I made in the script.
What have you got, sir?
Oh, the eraser head rosemary.
Yeah.
Show it to the crowd. Show it to the crowd.
And then his shop is at like 17th and Hawthorne. You guys should.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I drew this on Aaron's leg, and he promptly had it inked over the same night in the same building. Which, the question was, how do I feel about that, right?
Yeah, what are your thoughts about it? Like, how do you, like, what is, and what
I think it's a totally stupid thing to do. No, it's, you know, we're at a crossroads now, like, tattoo art on people is an evolving thing, and you know, I think, especially in this area, it's a common thing to be tattooed with things that are meaningful to you, whereas, you know, I'm from, like, the white suburbs, and you don't get tattooed, so I have a different opinion about that. Honestly, in my head, I'm always thinking, like, this is going to be on this person's body till the day that they're 92 and fall in a hole. Like, what does that mean, that they've committed this thing that might not even be the most important thing in my life to their bodies, you know? It reinforces my belief in the subject that I'm working with and the art that I'm doing. And to be completely honest with you, I don't know yet what it means that these people have made this commitment, but it's a good thing to me, you know? It reinforces my belief in what I'm doing. Because while people get tattoos all the time, for them to choose this body of work to commit to themselves, wow. Frankly, that's all I have to say on the subject.
I think tattoos are ridiculous. They should be worn by sailors only. Don't you two ever get any tattoos.
Yeah, this whole thing would be a lot shorter if Tony was the only guy. Grow up.
Tony.
See, I have two little girls that are 6 and 8, and I never want to see a tattoo on them. That's why I have to say it to kids. Yes.
How was your experience with Saturday Night Live? I remember a very different Drinky Crow voice, something like Dustin Hoffman.
That was Andy Richter.
Oh, was that Andy Richter? Drinky. Okay.
His brother
was actually kind of closer to what I would think, but his acting was kind of like this. But he could have pulled it off if we had like directed him. The problem was with that show, the director was me. We got into the recording studio, and they're like, okay, well, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I don't know. It was Adam McKay, Andy Richter, Sarah Thayer, and these actors are professional actors, and they're like, what do you want us to do? And I'm like, I'm not a director. They said, yeah, you're the director. Somebody else made me the director. So they just started they just started doing the voices, and it was fine, but I would have told Andy to speed it up a little bit, and what happened was they made 6 episodes, they aired 2 of them, and they decided this isn't really right for Saturday Night Live, this is what we do. I heard Lorne Michaels quoted as saying, this isn't really what we do. Lorne Michaels?
Ouch, yeah.
Was that the guy from Bonanza?
No, the guy from Bonanza is probably dead.
So it was funny. Yeah. So that's not what they do.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
But it was fun. Got on TV. Woo! I thought, hey, this is grand. As soon as I saw myself on TV, I said, this is my big, beautiful wooden house on the Hudson River. And then they didn't play anymore.
The fickle mistress, yes.
We're signing some books. It's going to take a long time. Look at all the books. Come on, sign some books.
Are you tired of answering questions? Passive aggressive.
You can ask questions when you get up here. Bring the books. Where's the line start, Dave?
Tony's from Boston, so he's annoying.
It takes a side 200 books.
Is there anything else we can tell anybody since we all happen to be in the same room before we get our Sharpies out?
Yes, one quick comment. It's kind of good for Tony, too.
Please.
Every time I read a comment, I think, my God, you are insane. That's all I want to say. That's Tony, too. Mostly you.
You know, I think what you're thinking is that it's not that we're insane, it's that you're scared that you saw a part of yourself. All we do, our job, is to have no shame. You heard it here. Okay, folks, is that everything? Shall we commence signing, or is there any last little bit of it? Okay, clapping, good. Thank you.
You've been listening to an episode of Words and Pictures, recorded by Bill Dodge at Powell's City of Books in September of 2009, and featuring authors and comics creators Tony Millionaire and Chris Onstad. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.FM, I'm SW Conser. You can find an archived version of this show later today at KBOO.FM/Words and Pictures. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture. And don't forget to support your community radio station at KBOO.FM/give.
Now you sing a song of liberty, blacks and packs of jocks. And I take you from this dump you're in and stick you in a box. Then I take you to Cook Briar and shove you in the ground. We'll stick your head back out and shout, we'll have another round. Like the great son of Cook Cullen.